When Amazon recently put out its electronic book reader, the Kindle 2, they said it would not only replace the printed book, it would improve books themselves. Jacob Weisberg of Newsweek went so far as to say, "Printed books, one of the most important artifacts of human civilization, are going to join newspapers and magazines on the road to obsolescence." Obsolescence? Really? Novelist Nicholson Baker decided to put the Kindle to the test. His review appeared in The New Yorker in an article titled, "A New Page, Can the Kindle Really Improve the Book?" Baker told Dan Strangchamps the Kindle has some obvious advantages over the printed book.
I mean, the Kindle has great advantages. If you're traveling, you can carry a lot of books with it. But for me, the first impression is of looking out the window on a cloudy afternoon. It's just a disappointingly unbeautiful experience. And I was sad about that because I hate writing bad reviews. I don't believe in bad reviews. I think that if something is not good, you just don't give it space. You move on to something that is good. So I was really looking forward to writing some kind of celebrational review about this machine. And I finally found the way, which is that you can buy books sold by Amazon that are called Kindle books, but you don't have to read them on this machine. You can read them on the iPod Touch.
And that's the experience finally that you were looking for?
Well, when the gates of relief opened for me, yes, that was the moment, because I realized that I could. It wasn't that I'm saying that electronic reading is anathema to everything we hold precious, and that it's that this machine is extremely awkward. I mean, it's very difficult to flip around in books. What do you want from an electronic book? Above all, you want it to do things quickly because it's got the advantage of having, electricity. It can move around. This is very slow to move around. But the iPod Touch and the iPhone allows you to read electronic books in the middle of the night. It's backlit. It has a traditional screen, a liquid crystal screen, not a newfangled screen developed at MIT. It doesn't have all of that sophisticated novelty behind it. But you pull this little handheld device out from under the pillow in the middle of the night, and you turn it on, and you don't have to wake up your spouse because by turning on the side light, you can just start reading Edgar Allan Poe or whatever it is you want happily with the screen dimmed down. It's at its lowest setting. The words are just kind of creeping out in that middle of the night way that you want them to, where they're just sort of dim voices. So I found that that was something that really changed my life. I enjoyed reading books on this little machine, which is about as wide as a New Yorker column of type.
You know, I try to be open-minded about the new technology, but I have to confess that deep down, the e-books are just, it's just one of those things I want to hate. No matter how kind of practical or clever or useful they are, I guess, want to stay a Luddite and curl up with my old, somewhat worn copy of Pride and Prejudice and turn the actual pages and smell the glue and I guess I just can't imagine preferring something electronic to the feeling I get from a book. But maybe that's terribly old-fashioned of me.
Well, no, I think that there's a good point about the fact that a book is an individual object, which means that you become attached to a particular cover and it gets dinged up and you live with this thing. The problem with an electronic reader that has 500 books in it is that you get sick of that particular shape because it's the shape for all the books that you like or all the books you're reading are going to have this. In the case of the Kindle, it's going to say Amazon Kindle at the top of every one. So you don't get to bond with the jacket design. And for me, I really like jackets. I like book jackets a lot. I especially like paperbacks and that new way that they've been doing paperbacks for about 10 years that has a slight kind of a roughness, a matte finish, and it resists spills. And I just really like book covers. I think we're in a golden age of them. And that's art. And that's these are people who are thinking very carefully about how to make something so beautiful in a store that you'll be walking past a table and your eye will be caught by something. And it'll have an author and a title and just some combination of colors and a photograph. And you'll say, oh, I need to hold that. That's lost. And we don't necessarily want to lose that. Just so we don't want to lose any beautiful kind of way that human beings make objects of craft and interest. So I think that that's a very good point. But I don't want to hate these things because I think that there are moments, and I really have to say, if you in the middle of the night can't sleep and you have this iPod and you can read little dimly glowing words and not bother anyone, that you might find that even you who likes the smell of glue would find that there was a time and place for words on a screen.
Now, so much of the experience of reading anything, whether it's on a Kindle or on a printed page or on an iPod Touch or an iPhone, it's the experience of seeing those letters. And it sounds like for you, you're very sensitive to the type itself, what the letters look like, the font even.
Oh, I think we all are. There are certain typefaces that are called good reading fonts, you know. And what does that mean? It means that they have some sort of mystical balance between being fancy enough to snag the eye, give the eye clues about what is an A and what is a W quickly, and yet not so fancy, like Gothic type, that they're confusing. And those kinds of typefaces have evolved over centuries of experimentation in Venice and in Leipzig and all the great printing centers of Europe. We're all trying to figure out what is it that really works for the eye to kind of skim along and catch clues from the tops of these letters and the edges of these letters. These typefaces work and these other typefaces don't work as well. And books just, I mean, we're at the very tail end of this tremendous tradition, and books do this very well. For some reason, Amazon decided, all right, we're going to use a different typeface. We're going to use this thing called Cecilia, I guess is how it's pronounced. And it's not a reading typeface. It's kind of a sort of a half, it's a little bit of a typewriter, but with a hint of proportionality. It's not fun to read it.
You describe it in your article as grim and Calvinist. How can a typeface be Calvinist?
Well, I mean, I got a little carried away, but it's just that here are all these different books of all different tones and qualities. Some are suspense novels, some are, you know, terribly technical books, and some are bits of poetry. And the problem with having one typeface that everything is pushed into is that it creates a kind of sameness. If it's a beautiful typeface like Caslon or even Times New Roman is a beautiful typeface. Any of the ones that Janssen, Bodoni, the books are normally published in or have been published in, that's great. It's just that this one is really quite an unusual one. So I think that this machine was developed by people who weren't really book people. But saying that, even so, I mean, I know that I, in writing that piece, made some Kindle enthusiasts very unhappy. And my feeling is that if somebody owns a Kindle or a Sony reader or something and really is finding that it has changed the way they read and they're reading much more and they're happy with it and they carry it around with them, I know one guy who reads it in the bathtub. That's a terrific thing, and you should just ignore what I'm saying. My job was to give my own reaction to the machine that the press was saying was meaning the end of books, newspapers, and magazines as we know them.
There's one more line I had to ask you about because it was funny. You also remarked that there was a passage in one book that you were reading on the Kindle, and you had remembered it as a funny passage, but then you read it and you didn't laugh. And you were curious, and you went and got the actual printed book out and read it, and it did make you laugh. So there's something about even the typeface on the Kindle that somehow killed the humor in a passage?
That was a revelation, and this has really ticked people off. They said, oh, you know, he's saying that things aren't funny on the Kindle. But actually, I'm embarrassed. It's true. It is true that if you give something a gray-on-gray quality and you present it a certain way, and it's not crisp and snappy, it's going to lose that little extra upper harmonic that allows you to understand it as funny. And it was a discovery for me that there was this passage that I like in a Robert Benchley humor piece from long ago. I think the piece is called Do Insects Think, I think. And there's this little anecdote about a wasp that's just great. And it isn't funny. It wasn't funny on the Kindle. It was not funny. But then when I went back to the paperback, it was great. And the clincher for me was that when I went to the iPod Touch and read the same passage a few days later, it was still funny. So I know that...
It was funny again on the iPod Touch?
Absolutely. It was hilarious on the iPod Touch, which means that this is, I think, a legitimate test, a reader's test of whether the Kindle can work for humor or not.
Nicholson Baker's review of Amazon's Kindle 2 appeared in The New Yorker, and Strange Champs spoke with him.